on day two of Geek Whispering live at VMworld 2013. This is Matthew Brender.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And we are happy to be in the hang space for round two of it. We hope you don't mind the background noise because it just is a little bit more organic and natural here. There's just a lot of people doing a lot of different things. And today we're very thankful to be joined by Lauren Malloy.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Lauren, it's a pleasure. You do a podcast that's well-known. Do you want to give it a little pitch?
Yeah, sure. I do a podcast called Adapting IT. You can find it at adaptingit.com. And I do it a little differently in that there's not a specific theme, but I mostly just interview women in technology, women in and around technology. So not necessarily engineers, although sometimes it is, but also marketers, sales, you know, all sorts.
And just to be really clear, you talk to them about technology itself, but you're not talking about being women in tech.
That's correct. Yeah, we try to talk about, you know, what their careers are and the IT itself.
Yeah, and that's what we wanted to explore here today. It's the flip side of what you do on your podcast, and that is we want to play around with the premise that is social media the great equalizer for women in tech? Are we at a place where social media helps women become more equivalent in the tech world, presuming, I guess, possibly incorrectly, that women are not yet equal in that case, but just want to leave that open for people.
Well, we feel plenty equal. It's just I don't know that we're represented the same.
Not represented equally, but you feel equal. Yeah, absolutely. So
sometimes we even feel a little smarter. Just saying.
I think that's a great point. Yesterday I went to the Women of Purpose event at VMworld. And, you know, one woman said something about, you know, how can we network like men? And I thought that was really interesting because I don't know that it is a gender thing that men network better than women. And a lot of people would say that women talk a lot more. So
yeah,
there's always that. But, you know, with social media, we've obviously gotten the chance to be on Twitter, to talk to our colleagues, not just in our, you know, metropolitan area, but all around the world. I think it has opened up a lot of things and allows you to network with not only other women, but other men. You're right. I think that has kind of opened up a lot of things.
You know, honestly, it provides a level of visibility. I think that maybe that was one of the issues before because there were so few of us. I mean, it is a little bit like a unicorn sighting. And there is something about, you know, with your podcast, I've had the pleasure of being on Lauren's podcast. With things like that, everything that you do to amplify your voice and again, you do so many great episodes, just kind of showing instead of telling. This is what women do in this industry and not over-focusing or hyper-focusing, it just is. That sort of normalization, I think, is inspirational and can help remove barriers. You never know what's going to be the tipping point for somebody to say, I've had a tough day, I've thought about dropping out of IT, you know, and going a different direction because of these frustrations and challenges, or, you know, that it's not normal or it's not right, so I'm not sure I'm going to go there. You never know. It's such a cumulative effect in terms of normalizing the fact that women can be strong in IT. And there's no reason why we can't. It's in this decade, it still stuns me that we have to have these conversations in some ways. I'm always a little surprised about it.
Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, it is interesting. We are still having these conversations. This kind of makes me think, an analogy, though, to the roles that the internet and social has played in many industries. And I'm thinking of gatekeeper roles and disintermediation. You know, back pre-internet, you'd see a lot of, you know, books or speaking slots by men, and the gatekeepers would say, well, I have a limited number of slots, you know, that's you know, this is who the voices I have, these are the authorities I have, I'm going to publish, you know, I'm just going to publish by these guys, or I just have these speakers who are the experts. And now, you know, post-internet, you have many stages. You don't just have a few slots on stage. Everybody has a stage. And so you're getting, you know, the self-publishing movement. You know, you're not necessarily judged by who you are, but how, okay, you wrote this book and it's starting to sell. And I don't care if you're a man or a woman, or it's starting to sell. I'm a publisher. I never really considered that topic because it was more, maybe it was even targeted at a female audience. I would, but now if it's actually selling, I can't ignore it, right? Because I'm at least have to look at the data. And I'm thinking maybe in the same way, social and tech and speaking opportunities, you know, I'm guessing that it raises visibility for everybody based on, you know, it does favor the extrovert. It does favor the loud, I guess. Favor the not the brave, but the loud. I don't know. Does that? Do you think? Does that? analogy hold at all?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's hard to break into those roles because the gatekeepers, as you say, want the people that have the biggest crowds, the biggest followers,
if you will.
So it's hard to break into that when you haven't already broken into that. It's like getting your first job, you know? How do you get the experience to do it? So, the fact that everyone kind of has a stage now, and if you happen to say a few intelligent things and you get a little, you know, a few more followers, if you will, not just on Twitter, but on all forms of social media, blog, whatever, I think you're absolutely right.
But it's also making those vehicles, taking advantage of all the platforms that are available to us. Like, I remember when you were... when you announced that you're starting Adapting IT, and you're just like, I'm starting a podcast. And that's all it took. Like, you just said, I'm starting a podcast. And you could do that because we have a microphone that's for a reasonable price and my laptop right here, and we're recording a podcast. And just taking that into your own hands, and it's easier today. It's it's a platform thing.
I will say, as far as, you know, yeah, anyone can start one, but that doesn't mean anyone's going to listen necessarily. and that first month, not many people were. But it has gotten...
Hi, Mom.
Right. Even my mom wasn't that interested. But you know, John Troyer, you know, helped me out by saying, you know, getting me on the VMware Communities podcast, and Mike Laverick, you know, tweeted the heck out of it, and Gene Rimmer as well. And so I had some good backers. You know, they weren't like doing it for me, and they weren't, you know, providing financial whatever, but they were definitely supportive, and actually so many men. And I think just because of the numbers of, you know, men to women in IT, I've had a lot of great women supporters as well, but there have been just a ton of guys that have, you know, been so supportive and just tweeted the hell out of it.
Yeah, I mean, as a man in technology, I am thankful when there are women that are technical and standing up, because it shows that it leads by example. I mean, we talk about this all the time, that we are looking for people that can be a leader. And we want to just make that stage as big and bold as possible for you. And that, like, when you do what you're doing, it brings a crowd around, and it makes all those different people the tipping point moment of, like, oh, she's doing it. I could do that.
Well, and this will be a funny micro example, but we have, every year there is a charity dodgeball tournament at VMworld, and one of the teams on there is the Cloud Bunnies. And this was an appropriation of a name where, you know, it was meant to be an insult, obviously, and it was turned around and owned. And so the Cloud Bunnies were formed a few years back. And initially it was all women, you know, a couple of guys around the edges. And then last year, we were having some difficulties. Again, we're still in this decade, but we were having difficulties getting enough women on the team to field an all-women, 10 women that would be willing to go out there and
play
dodgeball with the guys. And thankfully, you know, we had moved past the first year where there were no women, and there was a woman or two on the different teams, but we brought guys in, and I will fully admit, we put them in the smallest Hello Kitty shirts we could find. They were V-neck, they were pink, and they wore ears. And I mad props to the boys of 2012 who played, because that became part of the strategy of, this wasn't just about women. We do this together. Yes, we want to be respected. Yes, we want to be heard. Yes, we want to have voices. But we also want to stand side by side with our colleagues. This is not an only or a separatist movement or anything else.
No.
This is about normalization. And it was so awesome to bring them with us. And this year, nobody even flinched. I actively had some of who you might think the toughest guys in the industry saying, you know, which can I be a Cloud Bunny? Can I be? It's like, you know, our hashtag in joking is fear the ears. And we want to be a little ridiculous. We want to keep it in your mind. And I don't know. It's a funny little example, but there are ways forward, I think, to do this without being strident, but just to say, let's laugh, let's learn how to play together, let's learn how to work together, and not have some of the other negative elements that we've seen in the industry come up.
Yeah, and there's two things there I really like. And one is that you're using social to connect people. And two is that you're doing what people do really well on social, which is take advantage of their differentiation. Like, what makes them interesting is that you and I are not the same, and John and I are not the same, and Laura and I are not the same. So we all have to kind of play our own game, where we make a little bit of a social caricature of ourselves. Like, people are like, I'm the guy that will hug you and have a big smile on my face all the time. Like, that's,
while wearing a suit jacket.
Yeah. Like Amy is constantly eating bacon and talking about unicorns. Like, these are caricatures, but you played up the fact, like, as a woman, there's the caricature of the bunny thing. Like, that's clearly a more feminine team name. But then you make it, like, aggressive and fun, and you have men and women together, because... Like, when you said normalization, I just, like, hands in the air. Like, that's all I think it comes down to, is, like, normalizing, making this not even something we want to talk about anymore at some point in the future.
Well, and thinking about another couple of examples, Greg Farrow of Packet Pushers and I had a great conversation about how he's very committed to having women be on his podcast just so people can hear the voices. It's a hardcore networking space. It's very traditional male. And he's committed to just having women be heard on the mic so that people become accustomed to female voices speaking technology language. And I thought that was really such a brilliant way forward. Or Greg Nierman, another person who's been very supportive. When we think about the podcasting community, as we talk about social opportunities, you know, he's, Sarabella is a co-host. I've been on that show many times. He's also been very outwardly supportive of that idea that this is a place of many voices. And so if we're going back to our topic of does social equalize that, Lauren, what would you say? Do you feel like social has opened doors for you that as a woman in tech you wouldn't have opened before?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's probably the biggest thing, honestly. I mean, it's helpful to, you know my job and to, you know, be able to do IT. Right, right. But honestly, like, that doesn't really come up that often in social media. You know, people, I could be horrible at my job and no one would know. But
well, you'd get that reputation. No,
right. Yeah, and people, you wouldn't be able to answer the questions.
Right.
I would actually say
eventually,
social.
Yeah. It opens the door and then you still have to prove yourself.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. I mean, the people that I've met, the things I've been able to participate in, you know, blogger sessions, visiting SuperNAP, license keys from VMware, that I think that's all from social media, and I really think that's just been a huge help in enabling me. Sure. I don't do those things to be famous. I do those things to get more support and enablement from other people in the community.
I don't know, what do you think some of the barriers are? Why do you think some women don't come forward? I'm wondering about, you know, why they don't participate in the social channels. And I don't even think social is, especially on Twitter or some of those other forums, is necessarily just rewarding the loud. They say introverts perform very well in those kinds of written mediums, as opposed to, you know, not everybody wants to be on a podcast, not everybody wants to be on a video. What do you think, Lauren? What have you seen?
I was actually thinking about that during the last question. Honestly, one of the hardest things I have with the podcast in particular is women feel like they don't have anything to say, or they feel they're nervous in some way, shape, or form. And I think it comes down to self-esteem, honestly, and just thinking no one wants to hear them. That is the hardest thing that I deal with, people thinking they don't do anything that's worth talking about. And I don't know, because I don't usually have men on my show. It's one. I've had one, and it was Mike Laverick, and we all know that he has no problem talking. But but that's the hardest part, is just getting them that, you know, I can tell them that I can edit afterward. I can tell them all sorts of things, but until you get in there doing it, they're not comfortable.
Well, and it ties back into a conversation we were having just before we hit record about an article that just came out that said women might make better leaders than men. Men are rewarded unfairly for leadership qualities that are not actual leadership qualities, like narcissism. It's an interesting article. We'll have to find it and put it in the blog notes. But that perhaps behaviors in men that aren't necessarily true leadership qualities are actually rewarded because they speak up. And so it's very interesting when you're talking and saying, you know, women are naturally sort of downplay and say, no, I'm not special.
Yeah, we're going to the direction of generalizations, which I'm not going to shy away from. I actually think generalizations are very helpful, and they show you themes. They show you that men, maybe in the purview of the men we interact with, are taught to be louder, more aggressive, more willing to take that leap of faith into a podcast or something like that. And women are taught more to be quiet, background. while these are gross generalizations, they're still accurate a lot of the time. And you're still seeing that based on what your experience
is. I think they're backed up by studies. I think that's
absolutely studied
quite extensively.
Yeah, and then to the point of social media, it just makes the counterexamples so much more apparent. Like, you are a woman that is a counterexample of the quiet background person. You keep raising your hand, you keep showing up, you volunteer for everything, and you do a great job at it so you get more opportunity. And you help normalize the counterexample, which may just be easier to... It's easier to see because the platform is even for everyone.
I think it's interesting. I mean, it's not just in IT, right? It's all of life. You know, women are like this. And again, a gross generalization, but I grew up in a very different way, you know, with like a very strong mother and a very, you know, we won't get into all that, but, but you know, it is kind of a...
You had role models.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was never the shy wallflower. And I think that's part of it. Are we going to be able to change that, you know, when someone's already 30 or 40 or 60 years old? I don't know. Maybe.
Well, since we're touching on neuroscience, absolutely. The elasticity of the brain has shown that it may be harder just because you have so much experience doing something, but it's never impossible to make that shift. But it's easy to change clothes and change places. It's very difficult to change opinions and like ways of thinking like that. So,
Okay, on the topic of neuroscience, maybe we need to talk about marketing a little bit, since we are supposedly talking about social media and marketing.
Wait, just between the four of us, though, we don't want people to know that.
We have to have some self-loathing.
Occasionally do acts of marketing here.
Occasionally do acts of marketing.
So I wonder sometimes, so the old school way, the marketer would have said, oh, well, you know, well, maybe we'll put a chick in a dress on the ad, but we're not going to, the chick is not going to be the spokesperson because those dudes would never react well to it. So this week at VMworld, my boss's boss got up, Robin Matlock, who was our VP of corporate marketing, is now our chief marketing officer, got up and kicked off VMworld. And a lot of people, there were a lot of tweets like, Who is this? They didn't really, they introduced her, but it went by pretty fast. Do you think that this, and again, talking about this crowd of, you know, smelly IT data center people, mostly dudes, I'm one of them, you know, how did they, do you think they reacted well to that? Do you think that there was any, in 2013, do you hear of people still going through that thought process as well? I don't know if we can get Robin up on stage. Would she be an appropriate kickoff speaker for this conference? I don't know.
I'm going to jump in and say absolutely. Yeah. I know they wrestle. I'm no doubt they wrestle with that, because the thought that popped immediately in my head when we started talking down this path was booth babes. I mean, I'm gonna throw that bomb right out here. Because I think one of the struggles that women have had is how we're represented at conferences. If we're not the CMO on stage in a suit, it's like we have two choices. We can either be her, or we can put a skin tight dress on and hand out tchotchkes. And I won't tell you. It's amazing to me, again, in this decade, I've been asked only twice, to be fair. You know, people are trying to be polite. They're like, oh, are you working the booth? And they say it in a nice way. And I, you know, the last one I said, bless your heart, I'm glad you think I'm young enough and cute enough to be a booth babe. And they, it sort of jaw on the ground. And then we had a real conversation about what I do. And we happened to be sharing a cab. It was one of those random circumstances. People get thrown together. And he was on Twitter by the end. I convinced him to join Twitter.
Well done.
And so I think we all have that opportunity. But to Lauren's point, it's, you know, women aren't necessarily trained to even don the suit and get on stage. And I think there is a question of how it will be received. I obviously try to use humor a little bit to diffuse, but you know, Robin would need to take on that very senior executive kind of mantle, and I think we're permitted to do that, but undoubtedly it caused conversation. I'm thrilled that they did it. It says, you know, we've got women up and down the chain in different roles.
Sometimes I wonder if it's good or, I mean, that particular example, I think that's good. But there are some companies, I don't know if I'm allowed to say which companies they are, but, but, you know, they have a woman as the spokesperson, but she has nothing to do with the company. I mean, she's not even involved in any way, shape, or form, except for maybe doing a commercial. And that's kind of like,
That's less authentic. Right. I agree. I think that almost does more damage than good. I mean, I know we all put spokespeople forward, but I think they're... And it's interesting. I, when you're saying that, I'm thinking through my
There's
own prejudices.
There's a double standard of that.
Yeah, that there are men who serve in that tech evangelist role who may not have the chops to be able to do it, or a spokesperson role, but we would be less likely to question them. I would argue, I bet money the standard of scrutiny is higher for the woman than the man in that.
Yeah, I was just actually thinking, I led off with Robin, but now thinking about the 2 days of keynotes we've had, I think she was the only woman on stage.
Yeah, and the other thing that, here's what I want to presume. I want to presume that, or maybe that's the wrong phrasing already. Here's what I look forward to. The day when the woman on stage is giving the technical deep dive, and that's just totally normal. Because despite my best effort, I made the same presumption as everyone else. Well, at first I was like, oh, who's this? That's surprising. Because I hadn't heard of her. And then, two, does she speak tech or is she just pure marketing? And I didn't know off the bat. I didn't want to presume too much, but just based off what she was talking about, I'm like, I don't know if she could go into the tech. And I find myself assuming that, and I admit that very difficultly, but... I think
we all do it.
Yeah.
We have, because we haven't been trained. And again, it gets back to Greg Farah's point, which I think is wonderful, that the more we hear those words come out of a woman's mouth, the more technical she is, the more we can start to trust that, the more normal it will seem, and the more we'll change that assumption.
Yeah, I just met a microcode engineer that's been working on the VMAX for many years in engineering at an event last night, and she is absolutely wonderful at her job, and I guarantee she's being asked occasionally whether she's a booth babe or not. She's, like, super technical, very smart at what she does, and it's just one of those things that, like, I think I like elevating the counter examples because it helps us normalize it, helps us get past that. The prejudice that we're all admitting we have because we've been trained to, well, I'm not smart enough to get into that argument or not, but yeah.
So Lauren, I'm curious, you're an engineer, do you get mansplained a lot?
Get what?
Mansplained. Are you familiar with the term? Mansplaining is... Well, let me explain it to you.
Okay, please do, John.
Let me explain how it works. Mansplaining is when you perfectly know what's going on, but your colleague, who is a man, feels the need to, let me explain it to you, let me show you.
Here you go, sweetheart.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh!
So in, especially I think in technical conversations, you know, what I've heard is, and what I've seen is, you know, the dude who likes to explain it to you as if you didn't know already.
You know, I'm sure that's happened to me. I can't say it happens all the time, but I am sure that has happened to me. I think that IT people mansplain to everyone. And so you can't really take offense.
I think we're in just one podcast. Yeah, that's a prize. She just won.
You may not get called sweetheart or honey, but the connotation, the degradation, everything's going to be there.
I'm the expert and you're learning from me.
So, you know, you kind of have to learn to take things with a grain of salt when you're dealing with IT people, you know. I have friends tell me all the time that they feel, friends not in IT, should say, that they feel like, you know, it's the IT guy that everyone hates because he's such a jerk, you know.
It's the engineer.
Right.
Sorry,
right.
My brother's an engineer. Mm-hmm. I can say this freely. Like, oh my God, please don't explain that to me any further. You've been doing it since we were 7 years old.
Right.
Yeah, it's a personality type for sure. And I think they're a certain corner of the world that goes towards IT, and the repercussions of that is I like that people don't see gender in that. It's just like, I'm going to explain it to everybody because I think I know it better. Like, I don't mind that as much.
Well, one corollary to that, and it's something Lauren and I have talked about a little bit, is I think that women actually, I will say this, people do mansplain to me for sure, and I hear things I shouldn't hear. I hear things that are probably under NDA. I hear, because they're not sure I can quite catch on. And so my advantage is I get to go into the clubhouse easier. I get an invite. Nobody's going to stop me at the door. And the difference then for a man, I think, is they have a harder time getting in the clubhouse, but they get to have a different conversation when they're there. So for me, I think that is a slight gender difference and sort of what I have to work with, fight with the weapons at hand. I'm permitted access because I'm not seen as a threat. So they will have that conversation because they're not quite sure I can. It might make my head hurt. I might grow faint with that explanation.
When you're actually, like, taking note on software-defined networking, competing with... Wait, never mind. That's we're not talking about that here.
So, yeah, it's an interesting double challenge,
yeah,
right?
So what can we take away from that, Amy? What's the takeaway for us? Or anyone can jump in here, really.
Well, sometimes I wonder, I mean, Amy and I have different experiences as well. You know, I'm here in a sweatshirt and jeans, and Amy's wearing a nice dress. There's no difference. Like, it shouldn't matter who we are. Like, Amy might be called a booth babe, but I might be called part of... They think I'm part of the facilities crew, you know? But... So we get treated differently as well, you know? So it goes back to normalization, right? You know? So...
And let us, you know, we could easily switch roles tomorrow. I could, you know... Well put.
I just think that it's all about how you perceive people and how they perceive themselves, you know, confidence, and eventually if you prove yourself, it will work out well for you.
I think we need more buckets. I think the thing is men are allowed a few more buckets to be filed into. We all do make those snap judgments, and we make, it's just human nature. We've got so many people we interact with. Social has only amplified that number. And I think for women, we are stuck with booth babe or facilities in some ways. And, or humorless engineer, you know? Like, whereas a guy can be a not humorless engineer. I mean, there's more subtlety, more granularity. So more buckets. That's my request. Let us be filed more ways.
I love it. It's powerful. And back to our theme is social media, the great equalizer for women in tech. I think we've hit on a few points that are really powerful that... While it might not change all the assumptions we've been dealing with and we have behind us in history, it does give an opportunity for the unicorns, the different types of people, the different women standing up, to be just as visible as anyone else. And that's powerful. So with that, John?
Thanks for mansplaining that to us.
That was, damn it, that's exactly what that was.
You forgot to say sweetheart.
And with that, I shamefully close out this round of Geek Whispering. Thank you.
Thanks,
all.
Lauren.
Thank you all.
So much, Lauren. We'll have links to Lauren on the podcast.
That's awesome. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
This privilege is really weighing me down.